European and Japanese wish to maintain their progress of globalization, especially the trade activities.
Japan and the EU agree to a massive free trade deal. It's Wednesday, July 18th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Glad to have you with us. We're also on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, not all Asian Americans thrive in the United States. Trying to still speak the language in Australia. China bets on the World Cup. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Japan and the European Union signed one of the largest free trade agreements Tuesday that covers nearly one-third of the global economy and over a half billion people, and eliminates nearly all tariffs. It followed by a visit to Beijing, EU Council President Donald Tusk and European Commission head Jean-Claude Juncker, who have been preaching open global trade and against what they called the conflict and chaos of protectionism. The EU-Japan Economic Partnership Agreement is the culmination of 5 years of negotiations. Their respective parliaments must ratify the pact, which is expected to come into force next March, about the time Britain leaves the EU. J.P. Morgan senior economist Masamichi Adachi in Tokyo tells VOA's Victor Beatty this will give a boost to Prime Minister Shinzo Abe's economic priority of reigniting the world's fourth largest economy.
He's pushing this free trade agreement to many countries, including this Europe. And he's sort of now trying to be a protector of a free trade world against the attempt by the President Trump to block the many areas. So for Abe, it's for the promise to the own people and also to the international community that he's now trying to prevent the protectionist move in the world.
This covers one-third of the global economy and more than 600 million people. This is a big deal, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a big deal. But of course, you can argue that it's not the 100% abandon of the tariff or something. It's still a managed agreement, which is probably better than the blocking and threatening other counterparts.
This obviously goes against the trade tensions that involves the U.S. and other parts of the world over trade policies. Obviously, Japan is not going along with these trade restrictions or trying to avoid them.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, both European and Japanese wish to maintain the sort of progress of globalization, especially the trade activities. Therefore, it's ironical that U.S. President Trump's attempt to block borders, which actually pushing closer relationship between Europe and Japan.
Is this trade deal a substitute for what was called the Trans-Pacific Partnership?
It's not a substitute. It's a supplement, I think, because the TPP is, Pacific regions, and the EU and Japan is, over the Eurasia, Asia. Over the Asia. So, I'm talking about the continent of Euro-Asia. Therefore, regionally, it's actually a supplement, not objecting each other.
The Trump administration withdrew from the TPP shortly after taking office in 2017. Both the TPP and China's Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership already involve many countries in Asia, including Japan. These are among some of the top Asia stories you'll find currently trending on VOAnews.com. EU and Japan sign massive free trade deal. Hong Kong moves to ban pro-independence political party. Myanmar Reuters reporter says he was hooded and deprived of sleep. Expanded coverage of these stories and much more are to be found on Facebook at VOA Asia, and a great destination for you is our VOAnews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. There's a saying that the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. It refers to a growing inequality gap, and it's present here in the United States as in many other nations across the globe. However, the results of a new study on the topic might surprise many. It shows Asian Americans are hardest hit by inequality in the United States. VOA Asia's Ira Melman spoke with Rakesh Kaucher, the senior researcher for the Pew Research Center and chief author of the study.
Our main finding is that income inequality in America varies strikingly from one group to another. Today, inequality we find is greatest among Asians in the United States. And this is the result of a near doubling in income inequality among Asians from 1970 to 2016. And in this process, they displaced blacks as the most economically divided group in the U.S.
This sounds surprising because when people in the United States, as we have both talked to many of them, think of Asian Americans, we think of very well-established and financially successful people. So what happened?
Now, it is true that on average, they are better off than other groups, but our research presents a more nuanced picture of the diversity in this population.
Such as?
So what we find is, first of all, as we noted, income inequality is the highest within this group, and it has also increased tremendously in the last 4 to 5 decades. And this reflects the diversity and origins of this population, which is still principally driven through immigration. Since 1970, 80% of the growth in this population is due to immigration alone. And these immigrants have come for a variety of reasons from a variety of countries. They range from people who are here for reasons of family reunification, or they came as refugees following the end of the Vietnam War. Or more recently, they came under the more skill-based visa system, the H-1B visa program, to work in the technology sector or the healthcare sector. And then there are others who came here for graduate studies and have established successful careers in the United States. So this diversity is reflected in the diversity of their economic outcomes.
How much of these numbers and do these findings correlate with the increase and the greater number of immigrants from Asia to the United States?
Well, they correlate in the sense that this is a population in transition. It is rapidly changing. Just in the last 20 years, the population has doubled, and it has increased 14-fold since 1970. It is a population demographically in rapid transit, and what we are seeing is the picture of that transition at the moment. What it looks like in the future as the second generation and the third generation come to settle and into the labor market and we see their economic outcomes, that's something we cannot predict. But at the moment, we're definitely in a phase of transition.
Rakesh Kaucher also says financial inequality is on the rise at a very rapid pace in the United States. He says it is higher and increasing more quickly compared to other G7 nations. Kaucher spoke with VOA Asia's Ira Melman. Indigenous elders in Central Australia are leading efforts to save a critically endangered language. Phil Mercer in Sydney tells us of the estimated 300 Indigenous languages that once existed in Australia, and now only 90 are still spoken.
Language is a critical part of Indigenous culture in Australia. It's a repository for tribal knowledge, history and customs, and gives communities a valuable sense of identity. About 300 languages existed when European settlers arrived in Australia in the late 1700s. Although around 90 have survived, only about 60 are considered to be alive and in regular use. Others are considered to be critically endangered as tribal elders pass away. Academics say that colonisation has also had an adverse effect on Indigenous languages. In the Central Australian desert near Alice Springs, only 20 people are fluent in Potame, but children are being taught its ancient words in the hope that it won't die out. Community leaders say that for decades they were forbidden by their white teachers to speak their native tongue, but they did so in secret to help it survive. Tribal elder Kathleen Bradshaw.
This teacher walked past and said, "Do not speak that lingo at school." And we promised ourselves that we would talk it in secret and just keep it going. And talk amongst ourselves in secret. I think a lot of non-Indigenous people, they do not understand how important it is for Aboriginal people to have their language and to keep it strong.
The Northern Territory in Australia has schools where students learn in both English and an Aboriginal language. Many communities speak what's called Aboriginal English that reflects Indigenous language and culture. Its structure adheres to some patterns of standard English, as well as including words originating from Aboriginal languages. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Coming up, you bet the World Cup is big in China. You're listening to VOA Asia. This news from VOA Asia. Authorities in Hong Kong have begun the unprecedented step of outlawing a political party that advocates the territory's independence from China. Secretary for Security John Lee said the move falls under an ordinance that cites the interest of national security and public safety. He did not specify any accusations against the group. You're always free to visit VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, China wagers on the World Cup, and Japan offers highly individualized clothing in this week's VOA Asia Business Scene with Skylar Ogden.
China didn't make it to football's World Cup, but that didn't stop people from betting big on the games. World Cup lottery bets in China in the first 3 weeks of the matches outstripped the whole of the 2014 tournament in Brazil. Xia Lugan is a shop owner of a China sports lottery in northern Shanghai's Hongkou district.
During the World Cup, many people in China who are normally not interested in football, their enthusiasm is brought up now. So, the turnover of the lottery shop has gone up quite a lot.
6 years ago, Xia Lugan converted his auto shop into a run-down, smoky betting shop in downtown Shanghai. He says business boomed during the World Cup, with hundreds of thousands of yuan being bet daily, more than 10 times the stakes for a normal day. According to the China Sports Lottery Management Center, China spent 28.6 billion yuan in the first 3 weeks up to July 1st. Dwarfing the less than $5 billion wagered in the 3 weeks before that. While gambling is technically illegal in China, China's Sports Administration is allowed to run these lottery shops and uses the proceeds to reinvest in the country's athletes and sports infrastructure. Perhaps the investment will help China qualify in 4 years for the next World Cup, as so many hope. Technology meets fashion in the latest creation by Japanese e-commerce company Start Today. The retailer invented a skin-tight suit with 300 sensors that translate information about your body measurements to a phone app. After the suit measures you, algorithms process the data to determine the fit of your clothes. The technology allows the company to create clothes tailored specifically to a person's body, taking a step away from standardized sizing. Yusaku Mizawa is the chief executive officer of Start Today.
The time where people adapt to clothing is over. This is a new era where clothes adapt to people.
Shoppable ZOZOTOWN sites will go live across the world on July 30th, including in Australia, China, Brazil, India, the U.S., and the U.K. Yusaku Mizawa.
This ZOZO revolution started in Japan today. Today, it travels to more than 72 countries.
The ZOZO brand is on track to ship 1 million ZOZO suits to customers by the end of July. For VOA's Business Scene, I'm Skylar Ogden.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You know, technology is really great. It provides so many different ways for you to listen to our program. There's some technology that's been around for a long time, though. It's called radio. You can hear us on many great radio stations across Asia, like PSU Radio Patani FM 107.25 at Prince of Songkla University in Thailand. We thank everyone who tuned in today. We also like to thank our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Carl Starling, managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team that includes Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, and Doug Bernard. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a terrific day.